Hello and welcome back to Millennial 2021. This is the seventh night and there are going to be five streams tonight. An hour from now it will be, let me just see. Sorry, I should have had this ready. Oh yes, an hour from now it will be, we'll have Endeavour. 2 hours from now, Martin Lichtmas, one of my favourites each year. And then 4 hours from now, American Krogan. And 6 hours from now, Idealism Identity. So it's quite a full roster tonight. But first, we have the lovely Robin Riley, previously known as Critical Condition, and CC Bucko on Twitter, I think it was. now Robin Riley. So welcome, Robin Riley, to Millennial.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here. It's become one of my favorite online traditions of the holidays, for sure.
Oh, of course, I should really say welcome back to Millennial. Yes. Because you have, we were just saying this is the fifth time mm-hmm. she has appeared, starting in 2017. And we have generally talked about her life as it's developed each year because Robin has been at a critical juncture in her life, starting a family.
Yes.
Obviously that brings a new chapter each year. So this year we're going to talk about that again, and the things that have happened. So or your observations of family life in the modern age. So, okay. Well, again, thank you and welcome to the show. Now you wanted to talk about first the hardships. So
yeah, there's been a lot. Okay. There's been a lot. And I mean, I think even in a normal circumstances of the world, you know, starting your family is just like a really challenging time in most people's lives. But I had my first child, Magnus, on March 15th, 2020, which was 2 days before the entire world went into its first lockdown. And at the time I was kind of like, well, I mean, I don't really want anyone around for my postpartum anyways. I can just kind of like, I'm going to be inside for 3 months anyway, so it doesn't really matter. In 3 months, you know, this will probably all be resolved and it's not going to be a big deal. Obviously 2 years later, I'm going to have a 2-year-old, in 3 months. And he will be expected to wear masks in order to like enter some places. So we're in a really, really different world than I ever expected to be raising my family in. And I think the first and most prominent hardship of that has been the isolation. I think, you know, when you start your family, like all the kind of problems that you may have had with your parents, they become petty and insignificant, you know, because you have to rely on them. And your whole focus is not yourself anymore and your own little bitterness or begrudges with your past. It becomes your future, which is you're focused in on your child. And not having my family around, the isolation of the lockdowns and then like the awkwardness of being in public, having to wear masks, the confrontations of not wanting to wear a mask and then dealing with that in front of my son, it's been really brutal, to be honest.
I'm sorry. I mean, I'm sorry that all of us have gone through this, but especially you dealing with beginning motherhood. Mm. As you say, I had a similar attitude to you. I thought that this will just be some silly thing for a few weeks, maybe a few months at the most. That was my attitude. And because it didn't occur. I mean, why would it occur to you that this is, the world's about to transform, you know, that there's no reason to think that. So I think that it's not surprising. And of course, I can imagine that you would be thinking that you hope that normality is going to come back soon so that your baby can have some of that.
Absolutely.
As soon as possible.
Yeah. And I mean, even like as a mom, like I may not have the same or popular opinions as most moms that you would meet in a mom and baby like swimming class or like, you know, an outdoor activity group. But like those things are kind of irrelevant. You're there for the kids. And if it were in their normal circumstances, I could go do that and I could have chit chat and like just, you know, a momentary connection with another mom in solidarity with the struggles of having a young child. But all that's been taken away. So you can't even just have like a normal, like surface level chit chat with like another normie mom, you know, because everything is being dominated by this atmosphere of fear and just like distancing. And it's really horrible.
I wonder, is that supposed to come back in the future? Or is it supposed to be that from now on, mums just don't do that?
I don't know. Like the whole process of becoming a mom has become really changed by COVID. I'm pregnant now with my second child, and my prenatal care is like completely different than what it was before. I just received an email actually last night that due to new COVID restrictions happening on Vancouver Island, where I live now, there will be no more in-person midwifery meetings until after 38 weeks, which is like fairly late. That's like 2 weeks before I'm scheduled to go into labor. So I don't get to have my blood pressure read. I don't get to have, you know, a chat with anything I may be dealing with my prenatal care provider in person. She's never seen my face. Because in order to enter the clinic, I have to be wearing a mask, right? So I feel really just like out on my own in this pregnancy. And like, thankfully, I've been blessed with a really easy pregnancy. And I haven't had any severe problems or anything. But it's a very unnerving position to be in, planning, you know, the arrival of another baby, feeling like you don't even really have the support of your midwife. And also the fear of like, what if something goes wrong? What if I have to be transferred to a hospital? Like what would that look like? That like, I'm obviously not vaccinated. I'm obviously not vaccinating or even doing a COVID swab on my child. Will my husband be allowed in there? He's not vaccinated. You know what I mean? Like there's all these questions that pop up, and then will I be treated differently because of that? Those things, will I be treated you know, with more harsh attitudes or maybe even cruelty, depending on the person that I get lucked in with. So it's very, very stressful, actually.
I'm sorry. Yeah. There was one post on Telegram a few months ago that it was quite ominous because I think it was actually about, I think it was somebody couldn't get the medical treatment that they would have got 2 years ago for something. And I think it might have been physiotherapy. Mm-hmm. And they were showing the photo of the letter that they'd got. It was in Britain. It was the NHS.
Wow.
And they were saying that the letter said, this will be a telephone-only appointment for physiotherapy.
I don't know how they're getting away with this, man.
It was very, you know, surreal. And the Telegram post said, I think it was might have been Morgoth, he said, this is what they now want you to be content with. They now want you to lower your expectations of society, of the things yes. that you used to take for granted. And part of it will be reduced standard, like quite drastically reduced standard of medical care.
Absolutely. I mean,
it's really scary. Yeah.
I recently had to take Magnus to the hospital. He had just like some minor symptoms that were persisting a little bit longer than we felt comfortable with. We waited it out. We were patient. We didn't want to just rush him into the hospital, you know, needlessly. And also just because we're hesitant to enter a hospital anyways. But he had like a very sudden fever spike. And as new parents, we just kind of panicked and we thought, okay, let's just go in and see a doctor, have him checked out. Maybe get some blood work just to make sure that this isn't something more serious. And when we arrived, they had like a waiting area outside. It was in the after sunset. And it was like an open kind of like in the parking lot. People were sitting down. There was a woman there with like a newborn wrapped in blankets, like waiting to be brought into the porch where they would do a COVID screening before you would even check in to see the physician. And I mean, like literally treating women and children like, I don't know how you would even describe it. It's just barbaric. When we got in, finally, after waiting for 5 hours, which was brutal, of course, the doctor asked, you know, are you COVID vaccinated? You know, is Magnus up to date with his vaccines? And we haven't followed the schedule with the jabs here. You can't just like if I wanted to give him a meningitis shot, I don't have the right to do that as a parent. I have to do a booster. So the meningitis shot will be coupled with like 4 other shots, like a hepatitis shot and a polio shot, maybe things that I'm not comfortable with. Right. So
you can't get them vaccinated for other things without getting them vaccinated for COVID.
I don't know. And it can be different in different countries and even different provinces. But here where we are, everything is coupled together. So right, you're giving your, you know, in some cases, 2-month-old, 4-month-old, 4 or 5 shots all at once. And if you've done any like sort of research on the ingredients, the preservatives, there are definitely risks involved. Of course, there are risks with not vaccinating. There are risks with vaccinating. And I felt that the risks of vaccinating were higher. Maybe if we get to Europe ever someday again, where things are a little bit normal and I can say like, yeah, I'd like a whooping cough vaccine for my 3 or 4-year-old who is capable of withstanding getting an injection like that. Maybe we'll consider it. But as of right now, it's like completely off the table. So when the doctor found that out, he totally threw the book at me. He wanted to do a COVID swab on my then 18-month-old. When I said no to that, he was like, okay, well, I'm just going to assume that your child could have any number of fatal illnesses. I'll be right back. And then, you know, nurses started showing up with x-ray machines. It was really stressful. My husband was waiting in the parking lot because you're only allowed to have one parent in at a time.
All right.
So it was just, I really felt like I was in prison. Like I felt like, I felt
oh,
like
sorry.
I was...
It just sounds awful.
It was. And
I can imagine you saying, I was laughing there because it occurred to me that when he said that, you might have replied with a homophobic slur to him.
I may have wanted to, but I'm pretty polite when I'm out in public.
Yeah, of course. But it is interesting how everything has been made more complicated COVID, or that has been the pretext. That you had to get a COVID test, and then once inside, they would ask whether you were vaccinated. COVID swab. I mean, so even the vaccinated then must have to get the COVID test.
Yeah, and my son had no respiratory symptoms. He just had a fever and some swollen lymph nodes. Like there was no reason to believe that he had COVID. We didn't have any symptoms. Like it was just, you know, it's protocol. The hospital staff are following protocol with like mindlessly, to the point where your treatment, which is already barbaric in some places in Canada, because it's like a socialized healthcare system, it borders on violating your human rights. You know, it's really a lot. I ended up just like grabbing my bag and my baby before the tests were completed. And I ran out of the hospital. Like, I was just like, I'm just going to take this as a loss of my time and energy. Because I'm not staying here. I felt like I was pregnant. It was nighttime. I was tired. My husband wasn't there. My baby was sick. Like the level of stress that I felt was pretty traumatizing. It took me a couple of weeks to get over it. So, very, very grim.
Yeah, I can imagine. And of course, you said that your son was had a bit of a fever.
Yeah.
And the thing is, that used to be regarded as one of the most normal things in the world
for
a small child. Yeah, yeah, exactly. these are the rites of passage that every child has to go through. It's not a cause for alarm.
Yeah.
But now it's seen as, it could be the killer virus. Yeah. I mean, it's just insane.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, to move on. Oh, yeah, so he will turn 2 in 3 months. He will be expected to begin wearing the mask.
Yeah, that raises some questions about, like, how am I... Well, like, will I be able to go to church with him? I don't know, like right now, the church that I'm currently a part of, it's an OCA church, the Orthodox Church of America parish. And we recently have now just put in the strictest regulations for worship that I've ever experienced as a Christian. And I'm currently not allowed to go to church every Sunday. I have to go every second Sunday. So it's like, this is the Nativity fast. It's one of the most important parts of the year for Christians. And I'm being denied the Eucharist and I'm being denied the right to go worship with my family. So that to me is, it's not acceptable. We're considering checking out a Rokor, we're like a Russian Orthodox church right now. And even at the Russian Orthodox Church, if they are requiring my two-year-old to be masked, I might be out of options for worshiping God in the way that I would like to. And that's something that is really stressful and really upsetting to me. The way that Christians have been, I think, specifically targeted, it's worth mentioning because, you know, you see things like, you know, Walmart doesn't have capacity restrictions the same way that a 60 congregation parish does. You know what I mean? And there's a reason for that. It's not just, you know, arbitrary or ignorance. I think it's absolutely intentional.
Well, isn't it the same with fast food outlets? Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, the things that are bad for you seem to be actually gaining momentum in terms of their profits. Little businesses are struggling everywhere where the big box stores and the monopolies are thriving right now. If you look at the like annual profit takes of like Amazon, Walmart, like they're making way more money than they were before the pandemic.
Oh, it's massive.
Right. Yeah.
It's strange how many ways they've found to turn this to the advantage. As you say, the good things suffer. The good things are made less available, less enjoyable, less themselves, less authentic. And the bad things are it's the opposite.
Yeah, because I think demoralization is a huge part of what's going on right now. It's not just about control. It's about breaking your spirit in every way that they can. Things like going to church on Sunday, like I look forward to that all week. That fills me up. That like gives me strength for the following week. And if I miss even a single Sunday because maybe my son's not doing well on Saturday night, which he tends to do quite a lot, actually. He has meltdowns on Saturday night and then it's hard to get up on Sunday. He has like horrible timing. And then on top of it, I can't go to church because I'm not allowed because of COVID restrictions, you know. That's spiritually weakening me. It's, in my opinion, it's making me more prone to, dealing with the struggles of daily life more intensely because I don't have my faith intact. My faith isn't being practiced or that structure that I would be normally relying on. So,
yeah, sort of lifeline that you had come to rely on. Yes. And of course it was, That in itself was a fairly new phase in your life. It was something that you were probably just getting used to.
Yeah, exactly. I like it was the pandemic itself almost that brought me closer to my faith. You know, that's one of the things that has been good about all of this is that my relationship with God has deepened. My prayer life has deepened. I finally went from being a Protestant to a officially converted Orthodox Christian. I have my son has been baptized. Like we are an Orthodox family and that's amazing. And I will always be grateful for that. But like my desire to worship and to actually practice my faith is now so impacted that sometimes it doesn't, you know, it doesn't really feel like I'm an Orthodox Christian, which is really, that's really, really hard, you know, especially like even just like daily life is really, sometimes, you know, you go out, you're like, you've got a good feeling. It's Christmas. You're going to go shopping. You go to the mall. Just last week, we show up at the local mall and there was like a kids play area right next to a COVID vaccination station with a lineup out the door with adults with their 5 to 11 year olds. We're currently vaccinating 5 to 11 year olds in Canada right now. And then further down, deeper you go into the dystopian hellscape that is the Canadian mall, there's like a Santa photo booth where in order to cross the threshold of like the scenery to where your photo is taken, you have to be wearing a mask, show your vaccination pass. You have to go in a certain, like you have to follow the arrows to your seat so that you sort of detour around Santa himself, who is also masked and behind plexiglass for $30 a pop. It was really one of the most grim atmospheres that I think I've ever encountered in public.
It sounds almost absurdly grim. Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine that Rudolph was wearing a mask as well.
Yeah.
It's complete nonsense. I don't know what to say about that. I mean, and this is the kind of thing that's people will have heard of this. Everyone will have heard variants of this. But of course, to hear it from your perspective is interesting because it's all these things at once that will be affecting parents everywhere.
Yes.
Now, and this leads us to the next point. Your son will not have a normal, wholesome world to grow up in. Now, well, he's less than two. He's a year and a half old already, and it's been a strange. It's been a very strange world that he's arrived into.
Yes. And the thing is that like, I would really like for my kid to just grow up in like the world that I used to complain about in 2018, 2019, you know, like those problems. I long for those problems. I long for those to be my complaints. Now I feel like, my son is growing up in a world where, as a white male in Canada, the world is actively seeking to destroy him. And I think that there are going to be sacrifices made on like his innocence with regard to how I have to raise him now so that he will not be susceptible to being targeted in the variety of ways that children are now targeted in the public school system, through media, through just like pop culture itself and his peers. So that's disheartening. It's really, but maybe it'll make him into like this super Chad, like macho dude someday, you know, but right now he's my baby. And as a mother, it's really crappy to think about.
You said that, especially social interaction is, you're worried that he's not getting enough of that because of all because of this new world.
Yeah. And like, we take him to the playground as much as possible, which is like his main source of interaction. We have some neighbors with four kids and we have a play date set up for next week. And like every opportunity that I get to have him around children, I do. And he naturally is a very social kid. He's not shy at all. He loves being around other children. He's really excited about having a baby sister, this is one of the reasons why it's one of the many reasons why I didn't waste any time in getting pregnant again with my second child. It's like, he needs a playmate. He needs like someone to grow up with. He's definitely at a loss, or like, it's like a limitation for him to be just hanging out with me all day. You know, it's like, I feel like I'm not enough for him a lot of the time, which is hard as a mom because, you know, you're giving everything. You feel like you have nothing left to get. And at the same time, you feel like you're failing, and it's just never enough. So we do our best to give him as much social interaction as possible, but it would be more if things were normal, obviously. And then like, kids are weird, right? Like even at the playground, like kids are freaked out, you know, the kids who have parents who are telling them constantly the world is ending and there's like this deathly super virus lurking around every corner. Like the kids are paranoid of each other and they don't want to hang out with each other and just play freely the way that children normally would. So even at the playground, like, especially if there's like parents lurking around the kids, you're kind of like, is it okay if I let my kid just like go over there and just like have a normal interaction? Or is the parent going to make it awkward and like make my son feel bad by hauling their kid away? This type of thing, you know?
Yeah.
So,
it's
brutal.
Again, COVID has enabled or even made necessary, from the perspective of parents, this kind of attitude, which is so, it was an attitude of paranoia
and
mistrust. assuming that the other person is a biological threat to you.
Yeah.
The other kid is a threat to your kid. It sounds awful. Again, this is just stuff that would have been unimaginable for us. You know, that's just absolutely not how you were, the experience that we had.
Yeah, in the summertime, we were just like kicked out the door and told not to come back till supper time. And thankfully, I grew up in Outport, Newfoundland, where there was no threat or danger of doing that with your like 9 or 10 year old. You know, like you could easily just let even your 6 or 7 year old go out in the yard and play with the neighborhood gang of kids, as long as they were in eye vision. Like, there is no problem. Like, none of those things will be a part of my son's reality, unless I'm very lucky. And like the goal, which is to like find a tight knit community somewhere, buy some land with people that I trust who are also family oriented. Maybe I can construct that artificially for him. You know, that would be my ideal situation. But like, as far as it just existing in the real world, it's that I don't think that's ever coming back. I think that's gone. And I don't know if it'll ever come back. Because I think the children have been absolutely traumatized by this situation. The normie children, or children of normie parents who have bought into all of this, they have been forever altered by the past 2 years. So, yeah, I don't know.
That's one thing I was going to say about the constant disinfecting of their hands.
Yeah,
that as a sort of very frequent ritual just actually throughout daily life. I think I've disinfected my hands like 2 or 3 times during this
whole... I never do it. It dries my skin out.
Yeah, just during the whole pandemic, I think I've done it only to placate someone, just to shut them up, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, fine, I'll do it. I think for small kids, like, as you say, mainstream kids, they're doing it like, I don't know, three times a day, five times a day. I don't know how bad it is. And I've seen things where there was this awful video clip of a child, that every object that the child thought was a disinfectant dispenser.
I've seen that. They're walking around on the street and they go up to like a mailbox and try to disinfect their hands and stuff. Yeah. I've also seen pretty black-pilling images of like children who are like 4 and 5. So they would have gone from like age 2 to 4 or 3 to 5 during the pandemic, which are like, these are formative years. You become in many ways fundamentally who you will be in the years, you know, leading up to 5 and 6 years old. And they were like asked to draw portraits of people. And all the portraits not only had like the black mask on, but interestingly, they had the eyes blacked out, which was like, I wonder like how many serial killers are going to be like created by this. Like people who just have no empathy, no ability to read human emotions from facial expressions. Their ability to interact in a normal way and read body language has been forever altered and maybe damaged. It's unforgivable. It's a crime against humanity is what it is.
It's satanic.
Yeah.
I mean, it's evil.
It is evil.
What's happened here or what's been done here. So your last notes here about the hardships, you started with Canadian society is in free fall.
Yes, and it is.
Well, okay. Do you want to go into that?
Well, sure. I mean, there are no normal public interactions anymore. You know, I used to be able to like go out and like know that my opinions weren't popular, but like I could blend in, you know, and I could interact with people and have nice little social interactions with people. And, you know, life was just kind of normal and fine. Now it feels, I mean, like walking around in Canadian cities or towns, I'd say like probably between 60 and 70% of people walking around outside are masked for no reason other than the fact that they want to be. Like to not be vaccinated in Canadian society means you are completely isolated from all like the pub, the restaurants, the cinema, recreation centers, even outdoor public gatherings, like, you know, some Christmas shows in small towns with the lights and stuff, like you would be required to show a vax pass for that. If you are one of the unfortunate parents of children who have to go to public school, and homeschool is not always an option for people. I think it's the best option. And if you can't do it, you should, but it's not always in the cards for everybody.
And you know, they're going to make it as more and more difficult. I mean, inevitably they're going to do that.
Well, there are actually, there are some schools right now that are in, they're in a little bit of a legal bind up. It hasn't progressed far enough into the courts to know what the outcome is going to be, but there are children who have been vaccinated for COVID-19 against their parents' consent, without their parent ever giving consent of that happening. So that's happening.
That is so outrageous. I mean,
I know.
I when I heard about this, and it was Canada, that there was it was about 6 months ago, and there was a clip of people and parents were protesting, and the police were standing in a line. It was like something out of a dystopia. It was like really like a totalitarian dystopia thing.
Yep, absolutely. And I mean, even things like there's food rationing and product rationing going on right now, especially here in the island. We've had some pretty brutal weather over the past month. A lot of heavy rainfall, a lot of roads have been washed out. There are stock issues, which is contributing to like sort of even more mass panic and distrust of other people in society. So like, because of the pandemic economic circumstances, where things are like, the products are becoming more expensive, the products that you really want are becoming more rare. Even if you can find them, you're not able to find as much as you really want. Like my husband is like, this is like Yugoslavia. Like, what the hell's going on here? He has a much more grounded perspective on things than I do. Like, he still thinks that things are okay. Like, but he is coming from the perspective of having, family members murdered on their doorsteps by the government. So coming from the Balkans, he understands, where this is headed. And he thinks that things haven't gotten to that level yet. So maybe there might be hope. Maybe COVID is like a 5 or 10 year story. The elites will take the control that they want and manipulate and change society in the ways that they want, and things will go back to normal. It won't ever maybe get to that sort of brutality that he saw as a child in the Balkans. But to me, with my perspective, it really does feel like Canadian society is like the way that it was is lost forever. I am not like of the mind that I can be a hero and through activism or my work online or my writing or like my freedom of speech, which is like a total like myth now anyways, can change anything. Like, this is the direction that we're going down. And as a mom, it feels like the most that I can do is prepare for the coming collapse, which is inevitable, because you have the inflation, you have the sort of mass hysteria, you have restrictions on movement, restrictions on speech, trust in the healthcare system is gone. Like, it would only take a very small natural disaster for us to end up in like a proper Mad Max scenario. So I think finding my community here that I have, which I've been very fortunate to find. Like, I live in the woods now. I don't live in a municipality even. I'm surrounded by farmers and preppers, and among them, they feel the same way as me. There are no heroes in my neighborhood. We are looking out for ourselves and each other and preparing for what we assume is the end of life as we once knew it. I try to keep hope and not be like doom spiraling and thinking that it actually is going to end up like a Mad Max scenario, because I don't think that's in the elite's best interest. I don't. Like, I think they want us comfortable because we're easier to control in that situation. But it would only take one factor, really, one out of left field, chaotic factor thrown into the mix of the already unstable circumstances of Canadian society for things to get really bad. That's my perspective on Canadian society right now.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
I know it's, I mean, I don't want to labor all, but so much of what you said there is really interesting. And one thing that I can personally identify with is what you said there about you've given up hope that your activism or what you say online can change things, because I think this has been a difficult transition for a lot of us, including me, where we used to think that we could actually influence society.
Well, we were influencing society.
Yeah.
We were.
Yeah, I think we were. I don't think it was a delusion. I think we actually were. I think that's why they were afraid and why we ended up all getting banned from various things, because they realized this is actually this isn't just people chatting online. It's not just some face on a screen. It actually, cumulatively, they're having an effect.
Absolutely.
So, and so giving up that has been rather difficult for a lot of people, because you think this is what we're doing. This is what it's all about. We're having an effect. Whereas we've had to try and give up on that and transition to, in my case, I'm here for my community. I'm here to give people some sort of solidarity,
support the people that are already on the life raft.
exactly.
Yeah, that's how I feel too. And I've switched away from video making partially because I don't have time to do it anymore as a busy mom, and more to writing. And the things that I write about, it's not changing people's minds. It's like, if you're already on my wavelength and you're looking for solutions on how to make your life better, make yourself stronger, improve your relationship, walk towards motherhood with courage, then that's who I'm writing for right now. And that gives me a sense of doing something purposeful still, but I've kind of given up on talking or even like tuning into a lot of political stuff anymore.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? It's like, just as democracy is a sham, the whole political dialogue seems to be kind of futile at this stage. Yep. And this is why, last night, as I was saying before we went on air, I was... towards the end of last night's streams, I was thinking, have I been going on too much about COVID? Because even I am sort of overloading at this point, because with millennial. But what you've said now is making me think, no, I'm not. I haven't gone on too much about COVID. It really is this relevant, because it really is affecting everything. It really is transforming, or has transformed, the world. Yeah. And that doesn't mean that we can talk about nothing else. Obviously, we can talk about other things, but I think it would be a mistake to minimize it. Because today I was thinking, there was someone who'd commented under the Fergan's stream that he was saying that I'm getting too deep into this. And
it's inescapable.
And he was saying that I'm getting too open to the conspiracy side of stuff and all this. And I thought, is that right? Maybe that's true. Maybe I am. But then again, what you're saying, it's changing everything. It's making everything more miserable, less spontaneous, less authentic. And as you said, they're trying to demoralize us. It definitely. Yes. If they're not trying to demoralize us, then they're doing a fucking good job by accident.
And it's important to say that, because people who are demoralized and don't realize that this is a part of the entire plan of it, becoming self-aware of the fact that this is what they're trying to do, are more equipped to defend themselves against that demoralization, which is important. It's important to do. And I mean, as far as the conspiracy comment, every single conspiracy theorist, myself included, were talking about a year ago has come to fruition. Right, like the conspiracy theorists are like most valuable asset at this point, because they're almost never wrong. Like, I wouldn't take it as an insult that someone calls you a conspiracy theorist. It's it means that you actually have your eyes open a little bit.
You're right. I mean, I'm trying to think what hasn't been borne out. And I guess the more extreme stuff about an actual COVID passport, but that seems to be on the cards now. It seems to be imminent.
It's absolutely on the cards. And there are some places in Slovenia, there's not a lot of news coming out of Slovenia, because it's like one of these countries that like people even forget exists because it's so tiny. But my in-laws there, who I'm in frequent contact with, they've told me there are certain provinces in Slovenia where you can't pump gas without showing your vaccine passport. So like And there's another European country. Is it? It might be Finland. I don't know. Don't quote me on that because I can't remember exactly which. It's one of the more northwestern European countries, I believe, where they're doing the trials for having a chip implanted into your hand.
And that might be Sweden.
Sweden. Yeah. So like that was something that was unthinkable, really. Or like, even if you would consider it as something that was a possibility, you're like, yeah, but like, that's like 15, 20 years down the road. Like that's being integrated into society, like with total acceptance, like no one's batting an eyelash. People aren't like freaked out by it. It's, I don't know. I think we should take the conspiracy theorists a little more seriously.
Yeah. The other thing that hasn't been borne out yet is the quarantine camps, but we have seen like in Australia, it's there for sure. I mean, seems to be a, and some people say it's more like a holiday camp, but it's a holiday camp that you can't leave.
Yeah,
we have camp that, you know, they'll chase you, like a like a rabid dog if you try to leave.
Absolutely. Here in Canada, we have what's called COVID hotels that you have to pay for out of pocket. So if you've been flying internationally, even if you're fully vaccinated and got your boosters, you have to stay in a COVID hotel and provide multiple negative COVID tests before you're allowed to leave. And just as something that I want to mention, because I think it's an interesting thing that's happening here in Canada, before I forget, we move on to the things that are a little bit more uplifting so we can end the show on a good note. I heard on the radio not that long ago that there's been some new legislation that's been passed here in BC, where people who are part of the resistance here, which that exists, like there are people who are wise to what's happening here. They're few and far in between, it seems, but they do exist. They've been going to sort of general hospitals and stuff where people are being vaccinated, and they're like handing out pamphlets and information and kind of like doing a peaceful protest against the vaccination of children. That's mostly what they've been focusing on because I mean, adults have a right to do what they want to do with their own body. But when it comes to children, things are a little bit more severe, I think, more important to get the word out about. And doctors have been feeling intimidated and threatened by the presence of these protesters. So there's been new legislation that says if you make a healthcare professional afraid to do their job, and that's the exact wording, if you put them in a state of fear about performing their job and servicing the public adequately, you get an immediate 10 years in prison. There's no fines. There's no workarounds. It's a 10-year in jail sentence. And that's like insane to me. I couldn't believe that when I heard that on the news, but that's something that's happening in British Columbia. Yeah.
I thought you were going to say
fine.
A night in the cells or...
No, 10 years in prison.
Yeah. And I can understand the rationale, that the way they'll defend that is, well, it's a healthcare professional. It's a key worker. It's front line. And
they're public, saving lives.
Yeah.
And there's blood on your hands if you're stopping them from doing their job.
Exactly. You're effectively a sort of murderer by proxy or something.
Yeah.
So 10 years, that's just incredible.
Yeah.
But you see, every part of it has this fatuous rationale like that.
Yeah,
where you know it's built, you know it's rubbish, but you know that people will go along with it. It's awful. Okay, let's move to the blessings, the nice things that you wanted to list, because you said that even though it has been a story of hardships, the motherhood in the age of COVID, there have been things that have given you hope and that have kept you going. So let's go into that.
Okay. Well, part of, I think, resisting the demoralization is not giving in to thoughts about, oh, well, I can't have kids now. You know, like, yeah, it's harder. Yeah, there are lots of things about having kids now that sucks. But my son is the light of my life. Like, he gives me the courage and like the happiness and like everything that I need to know that whatever it is I have to do to get through the day, like, it's just worth it. You know, it gives my life purpose and meaning. My life has more purpose and meaning now as a mother than it ever has. And so the things that have been made difficult by becoming a mother, in the grand scheme of things, the bigger picture, they're minuscule, because my life has been made so much better by having a child. And now I'm going to have another child, which is really, really exciting. So, you know, my family's growing. We're not letting the atmosphere or the culture of the country or the world stop us from achieving what it is that we want to achieve most fundamentally, which is having a large family and raising our children to be Christians and good people. So if anything, it's emboldened me to do it more, you know? So that's a good thing.
Yeah. And of course, now that you've had the first child and it's you're doing it in this environment has materialized around you, I guess you may as well just have more and more children.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're now in this situation. Yeah. So does it ever occur to you that had you waited another year,
yes,
then COVID would have started and you would have thought, let's wait until this is all over. So you would never have started.
That thought occurs to me so often, Woz. Like, I can't even tell you. Like, I'm very acutely aware of how narrowly I made it to get the life that I have. And like, I think sometimes, like, with my persona and the things I talk about, it can come across as like, oh, she's like Miss Perfect. Like, she just has everything. And, you know, that's how I think about myself. And it's like, no, like, I got lucky, you know? And that's why I hesitate to, like, you know, really condemn people for, you know, not being able to make it work, or like act like I'm better than other people because I did make it work. I feel unworthy of how many blessings I've been given with regard to finding my husband, first of all. Like, I literally I found my husband and moved back home to Canada within a year and a half, 2 year span. And then within 4 months after moving back to Canada with my husband and starting my family, that's when all this happened. So the time frame is like, if I had even been a year behind the curve of this, I probably would have been, you know, alone with a cat and a lot of plants. Oh, you're frozen, Woz. I don't know if you can hear me. Oh, so is it just me now? Am I hosting millennial? Yeah. What I said is definitely the case with regard to how I feel about my blessings and starting my family. I don't know if Woz is going to be able to come back. So it doesn't really make sense for me to just start going on to the next topic. And I can't end the stream, so I don't know what to do. I'll wait another moment to see if he'll come back. Because if I end the stream and I just, like, leave, I don't know if we'll lose everything we spoke about or if it'll be difficult to restart the stream. Hope everyone's enjoying the chat and having a Merry Christmas. I'm not, like, blackpilling you too much. It's too bad I can't see a chat. I wonder, is there a chat on Odyssey? Someone just messaged me and says that I can't see the chat. No, or can I see the chat? And no, I can't. There is a chat. Okay. Well, I don't know how to see the chat, unfortunately. And I don't even know if I should. Am I just like literally taking over Millennial now? I'm your host of Millennial 2021. Maybe Woz has like connection issues or something, because he probably would be back by now if it was just a minor thing. I'll wait till my friend here has updated me on maybe what the chat is saying. He'll be back. That's what my friend is saying. I don't know. I feel bad just like continuing on the conversation without Woz. Wish I could see the chat and then you guys could ask me some questions. Let's see. Oh, Woz, my internet cut out. Don't worry, coming back. Okay, so we'll just wait. We'll just hang out here. It's all good. Crisis averted. Woz will be back soon. Sorry if I'm just like boring right now, guys. Let's see. So my friend's giving me suggestions for things to talk about. I don't want to just like start talking about something like random, even though it's boring to just like not listen to me talk, because when he comes back, my favorite cheese. Okay. I mean, it's the holidays, like it's the time of the year where cheese boards are around, right? Lately, I've been really enjoying Gruyere and Comté, especially with like my husband, he went all out for our Christmas prep, I guess, with food and stuff. And he bought an entire leg of prosciutto that is imported from Spain. And it comes in like a wooden vise. And you can kind of like shave off the prosciutto. So we're going to have that on the table with like all kinds of like goat's cheese and brie, Gruyere, Comté, Havarti, like the whole thing. And that's what I'm going to be eating for Christmas.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I have a friend who's been messaging me, giving me ideas of things to fill the dead air with. So we're talking about my favorite cheese and what I'm going to eat for Christmas.
Right, okay. Sorry, everyone. I should have said my internet isn't the most reliable. I'm trying to get it replaced, but with fiber optic. But for now, I have to live with this liability. It's infuriating. And it did happen, I think, with the Faust hangout a few nights ago. My apologies.
No worries. I'm glad I stayed, because it would have been like terrible to just cut it off then.
It wouldn't. It was going so well, but you know, it's not it's not completely lost. you just started saying how close you came to not making it. You were lucky. Yeah. And then you started saying about your husband from Slovenia. Yeah. So could you take it from there?
Yeah, sure, of course. It really feels like I met my husband. I met my husband on Twitter. Everyone knows Twitter is a dating website. And I was very fortunate to meet him when I did, because like I said before, you got cut out and we lost you. If I had been behind the curve in meeting him online, you know, by a year and a half even, that long distance relationship would have been either a perpetual long distance relationship. And let's be realistic, like it doesn't matter how much you love someone, you can't forever be long distance with them. You have to be able to have physical contact at some point.
Definitely. This is something I've emphasized to people. Meet them as soon as possible, because if it drags on for months and months and you're always talking about one day when you meet up, eventually it's difficult for the passion to survive that. It's going to dissipate, because that's human nature.
Yep. And I think specifically with long distance relationships, the longer that you stay long distance, the easier it becomes that people become performative. you know, because you want to keep things interesting, right? But there's nothing really happening. So there's like this element of theater where you're trying to like be the person that you know that they want you to be so that you keep them interested. And then like when you actually meet the person, it's like, this isn't the person that I thought that I was talking to.
Right? Exactly. You start to develop a false impression of them in your head or vice versa. And then you meet the reality and it's like, oh, right.
Yeah. So what was very fortunate, like I was able to, we were long distance for, I think 8 or 9 months, like, and I was kind of back and forth between Canada and Brussels before I finally decided, okay, we're going to get engaged. We're going to have a courtship. And if it works, then we will be married within 12 months. And that was what we agreed. We were very pragmatic about the timeline of things because we were both in our 30s, like early 30s. Well, I was 28, I think, at the time. I was at the end of my 20s. So we both felt haste with wanting to get our family started and like find out whether or not this person was for us. So like, that feeling of being hasty and like wanting to get things rolling actually really worked in our advantage. Cause if we hadn't, I wouldn't have found my husband. And if I hadn't found my husband, I would be alone right now without children. I wouldn't be able to be a stay-at-home mom. I'd probably be working some like crappy job in a cafe just to make ends meet or living with my parents, you know? So like, I hope I never give across the impression of like, oh, I just like, I'm so smart. I figured everything out, because it really was, I hesitate to say luck because I don't really believe in luck. It feels like God gave me a very big blessing in allowing me to sort this out at the very last minute so that I could, even with all these crazy things going on, still be living the life that I'm living, which is my ideal life, you know, a mom, stay-at-home mom, in a beautiful place. So,
you know, I do think that it is the ideal. For the woman to be the stay-at-home mom and for the man to bring in the money, it just seems like an ideal. There's a reason why it was traditional. There's a reason why it was hankered after. There's a reason why it was missed once, you know, the move to the cities, the industrial and all this. And there's a reason why we resent feminism in the 20th century. And there's a reason why the third wave feminists are insane and why we call them insane. Because this is a setup that just works. It simply works.
Yeah, and it's also a feminist myth that like when you're a stay-at-home mom, you're just like this broodmare that is like a household slave doing chores all the time. Like I mentioned earlier, like I do freelance writing work. The money that I make from that is like, it's like fun money. Like I spend it on like cute baby things that I definitely don't need, but want, you know, and it's like guilt-free money. Like my husband doesn't care what I do with that money, but like I still find purpose in other ways. And like when my children are older, I plan on doing things like hopefully selling fruit and veg from my garden or community volunteering through my church. And like women who are stay-at-home moms actually have more free time to be creative and follow their passions, which are purposeful and contribute to society in immense ways, than women who are like doing a 60-hour work week in a law firm. That's genuinely what I believe.
Oh, absolutely. It makes sense. But this is the cliche about the move into the workplace has changed it so that a woman isn't working for her husband anymore or dominated by her husband or whatever. She's now working for her boss who doesn't care about her nearly as much as her husband would have.
Exactly. And we've also been very blessed that my husband is like, he's a very, I don't know how I should describe him, but when it comes to his work, like he's ambitious, like he's building a dynasty. Like he's not just paying bills, you know, like he has the mindset of I want my great grandchildren to be benefiting from my labor type thing. Like he's a very future oriented, hardworking, innovative, intelligent man. And when the pandemic hit, he was working in a job that was great, like pay the bills. We were very comfortable. But he was kind of miserable and he didn't see himself being able to grow and excel in the way that he once thought he could. And so the pandemic kind of like opened up this new atmosphere, I think. I can't dox what it is that he does as a career, like what he actually does, but like due to the pandemic, opportunities arose that we never would have considered otherwise. And
he works at Pfizer.
He's riding the tiger, guys. It's nothing evil. I swear. I promise it's nothing evil or immoral. It's an awesome, super cool job. I wish I could talk about it, but I just
can't. Don't.
No, I can't dox him. I can't dox him. And he had to like take a huge risk. Like we had just had a baby, and he was like, "Am I going to completely change my career field for this totally new avenue, which is volatile? And you know, there are risks involved. My job that I hate has no risks." It's a steady income type thing. And he just went for it. And because of that, like our family is continuing to thrive and be more secure and be able to like consider options for our future that we never would have been able to before. So like mindset is really important. And being in a relationship with someone or having people around who are, you know, they're not going to be demoralized. They're not going to allow themselves to be demoralized. They're instead going to like look out at the chaos and see opportunity. That's been a huge blessing in my life. And I think it's something that everyone kind of has access to if they have the right mindset.
Yeah. And of course, you're, you know, just in case there are any women listening to this who think that, okay, I should find a guy like that. Yes, you should. But it's also your job to support him in that.
Yes.
So yes.
That's very true. My husband has very high standards for me. It's difficult sometimes because we're such different people. Like I'm like I have this like Anglo culture, like Canadian Anglo centric culture, and he has this kind of more brutal Slavic upbringing, where like you know, he is a perfectionist and wants things done the right way. And if I don't do things the right way, he'll point them out to me, and like then I'll take it personal. But it's like, no, I'm helping you. And sometimes that can be difficult because there's kind of like a cultural difference, even though we're both like, I guess, like European descendant people. There are still cultural differences which make it really difficult. But like, I think if I were to give like a little bit of relationship advice, like whoever it is that God gives you as your life partner, like that person has been assigned to you to help you work out your salvation. And if it, like when he like pushes my buttons in a way that's like actually not threatening or anything, but like it's bringing up something in me that's an issue, that's an opportunity for me to meet him where he is rather than react. Right. And I think that's something that we all can do in our relationships, you know, because no one is like with someone who's like, well, if they are with their mirror image and you're with like a soulmate type person, you're probably not growing. Right. You're probably not improving and becoming better as a couple together. So,
yeah. Okay. That's a very interesting thought. Okay. So, and another one is you're thankful that you live in a place where you can homeschool your children. Yes. You might want to talk about that.
Yeah. That was one of the reasons why we decided that we wanted to move to Canada back in like 2019. We were in Belgium at the time, and homeschooling, I don't think it's possible. I don't think that you can homeschool in Belgium there and Germany too. Like, I don't think you're legally allowed to do that.
Definitely not in Germany.
Right.
Yeah.
So there are definitely more, I'm not sure, maybe there are loopholes and ways you can get around it in Belgium, but definitely not in Slovenia. And if I were to homeschool in Slovenia, there are like I would have to teach my children a Slovenian curriculum, which I obviously can't do because I can't even speak the language properly. So we, even back then, like Globo Homo had infected the public school system, and we wanted nothing to do with it, even back then. So choosing a location where I could have a active part in my children's education was extremely important to us. And that's why we chose British Columbia. Yeah.
Right. Okay. And then finally, people in your family are on your wavelength. You haven't experienced a single personal relationship loss.
Nope.
So that is lucky, because I know a lot of people have been saying this, that their lives have transformed in that way as well, that they've lost friends and relatives. I mean, it's turning brother against brother, etc.
Yeah, I've also known friends in my social circle who have had, you know, complete loss of like parental parents being in their lives, brothers and sisters. But like I kind of cleaned house when the, during the Trump years, like when everyone found out that I was like who I am, I guess, my online persona and my social media, the people who were not on my wavelength and weren't going to accept me for who I am, they politely showed themselves out of my life. And so I was left with the people who actually do accept me for who I am, come what may. They know my heart. They know I'm not like a malicious person, even if they disagree with the things that I say online or that I think. And they're able to, they have like, you know, they're adults, so they can interact with people who disagree with them, right? And thankfully, I have a very loving family who, like, there are people in my family who are fully vaccinated, who have never, ever made me feel like I'm a bad mother or a bad person for not vaccinating. They believe that I have the right to choose that for myself, and they respect that this is not something that I want to do. And it's never been a topic which has had any animosity behind it in my family. And I haven't felt in a negative way towards my family members who have been vaccinated either. Like, I do believe that we have the right to choose these things for ourselves. And if you are swindled by something and you choose something, I respect your right as an adult to be fooled and then hopefully learn from your mistakes, right? Because if like the whole red pill experience has taught me anything, it's that people make their own choices. Like, I don't believe that we can really red pill people. It's something that happens from within themselves. And sometimes people's threshold for what needs to happen to wake them up is higher than others, right? So who am I to say, no, don't do this? Maybe this is the thing that you need to have happen to you to bring you to your knees so you can see reality as it is finally. And for one family member, that has happened. They took the first vaccine, and the person that they're married to had also took the vaccine, had a very severe, like 3 month long reaction to the vaccine. And now that boosters are coming into play, they're like, no, I'm done. I'm out. I see through this now. And so if I had been like, you know, screw you, I don't want you in my life because you've done this, and not given them, you know, the freedom to walk their own path, then they wouldn't be there, you know, or they wouldn't be in my life now.
Yeah. Yeah. You would have antagonized that relationship. I mean, I think it is important to some extent to let people come to things of their own accord, especially when we are in a severe minority. We don't have the luxury of lording it over people on this.
No.
So I think we should, you know, should be tactful about it.
Yeah. The easiest way to do it is just to explain why you don't want it. You know, like, you don't have to tell someone you shouldn't do this because, when you can say, I'm not doing this because, you're still giving them the same information, right? But you're not doing it in a way where your finger's pointed at them, which makes them more receptive.
Exactly. And it's the same with other issues as well. I hope I've always said this, that you shouldn't be too aggressive and preachy with people, because people just shut down. They don't like it.
Yeah, that's true.
Finally, this is the last point. You said, I will never give up hope. Vengeance will be the Lord's.
Yeah, that's true. I'm not going to, like, there are days where I'm angry and there are days when I'm sad, and I hand that over to God on those days. And I'm not saying that I'm perfect or that I'm like, you know, happy-go-lucky optimistic all day long every day. I have hard days like everyone else, but I'm not going to let like the darkness of this world enter my heart and poison me. You know, I have to be a strong woman who keeps to her convictions, who is positive and uplifting for her husband and children. That's my priority. And so I know that it's not up to me to rectify these things. You know, it's not up to me to go out seeking revenge against the people who I believe are responsible for doing this to us. I do think we're in the end times. Maybe that seems like a little bit like a fanatical thing to say, but I do believe that. And my God is a wrathful God, and he will have the last laugh. He will win in the end. And so it's not my responsibility. That's not my cross to carry. I'm not going to stoop to their level. You know, I'm not going to do evil things to people or wish evil on others. I'm going to keep my internal world peaceful and intact so that I can hopefully spread that to those who are receptive to it and keep it as like a nice atmosphere in my home, which is like our little sanctuary from all of this.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people forget that because so many people live in cities. They live alone or they live with their parents. God knows a lot of that these days. And I think a lot of people forget what a home is supposed to be and why, you know, the importance of having your own home and building a, creating a sanctuary, an oasis from the world.
Yes.
Why it's so important. You've illustrated that quite nicely. So it has been a very difficult and surreal 2 years, but mm-hmm. you feel optimistic about getting through it.
Yeah, because I have my family. I'm a mom. I'm going to be a mama too soon. I have, instead of becoming bitter and resentful, opened my heart up to God, and I've made myself softer as opposed to harder in the face of these hardships. And I feel like I've become a better person through it all. And I hope that I continue to become better for the people who look up to me online and appreciate my perspective through my writing and whatever little small mark I make on the internet community, and for the people that I love most. So yeah, I hope that, I mean, I'm not supposed to hope for things to get bad, right? But I do welcome the challenges, you know, because if there's anything that I've learned over the past 5 or 6 years, it's that, you know, those challenges have made me better, made me stronger, made me more into the person that I would hope to be. So, yeah.
Yeah. And of course, that is another thing that's worth saying is the importance of having a life partner, somebody yes. who loves you and you love them.
Uh-oh. Oh, no. Just as he was winding the conversation down, he may have lost his internet again, folks. I hope not. I hope it's just a little glitch. This is a spiritual warfare. There's some sort of like dark energy affecting the stream. I'm being too uplifting. I'm uplifting too many people out of the depths of the satanic regime. Someone's trying to sabotage the stream. Some dark entity. But we're going to persist. We're going to persevere. Oh, and he's gone again. Brutal. My friend says NSA intercept. It's the feds. I don't want to shut down the stream without woes. So how long did it take last time for him to come back? Like 5 minutes, 2 minutes? I hope everyone's having a happy nativity fast out there. If you're looking to hear more from me, best place you can find my work right now is probably on Instagram or Twitter. That's where my article links are most often posted. Bo says he's going to return and he's going to wrap it up quickly. Yeah, I'm not going to shut down the stream without him being able to wrap it up himself. But yeah, like most of my writing is centered on, you know, family oriented stuff, motherhood, health, money saving tips, even some like lighthearted fluff writing, like style and, you know, girly stuff. It's mostly aimed at women. I do think there are some men and family-oriented men who they appreciate my perspective on things, and they offer links to my stuff to their wives and their daughters and that kind of stuff. But yeah, I'm not really so much on YouTube anymore, except for I have like a mom channel with Rebecca from Blonde in the Belly of the Beast, and we upload sporadically about motherhood and pregnancy, and that stuff is very much geared at women. I don't think many men would want to find themselves in the middle of one of our streams. There's a little bit too much TMI on those streams for men, I think. But yeah, you are what you consume on here. So make sure that you're getting in content that lifts you up and is filling you up and making you feel stronger and making you feeling more capable of dealing with the situation that you are presented with, because everyone has different challenges and different circumstances with regard to what's happening with COVID and everything. So hopefully my stuff can help some of you out. But yeah, there probably won't be much video content on my actual YouTube channel. Book recommendations, the Orthodox Study Bible. All the books that I'm currently reading or listening to on audiobooks are centered around orthodoxy and mostly motherhood. There's a book I'm listening to right now called The Ascetic Life of Mothers, which is written by an Orthodox author. And it's about, obviously, the thinking about motherhood as a form of asceticism, which is helpful because motherhood is really hard. There's a lot of yearn posting online from, you know, women who want to be moms and desperately want that. And I think that's wonderful and good to see people openly desiring for motherhood, but it's hard. It's super hard. It's the hardest thing I've ever done in my whole life. Best thing I've ever done in my whole life, but it's also the hardest. So I'm reading that. And I recently read Roosh's book, American Pilgrim. That book is awesome. Loved it. Love his story and his journey to Orthodoxy. It's been really helpful for me as a new convert to watch his journey. I really like his writing and his content. I read a lot of books about tractors and farm equipment and animals and stuff with my son. Those are good books. I know a lot of different things about tractors now. If you're looking for good books for children that are faith oriented, or if you're a Christian and you want to find good books for kids that are based around the faith, ancientfaith.com has a really good bookstore with some really beautiful books that have helped my son learn a lot, actually.
Sorry.
No worries. Okay. I'm just chatting with myself.
All right. Okay. So what we were saying, and we'll try to wrap this up nice and quickly, because I don't know if it's going to happen a third time.
No worries.
It's actually been reliable except for one night and now this night.
It's okay. The stream is too good. The feds are after us.
I was saying, that having a partner and when you love each other, it's a galvanizing thing. It strengthens you because you end up having a resolve and resilience that I think is very difficult to have when you're a single person.
Yes.
Again, there's a reason why people have always pair bonded. But yeah, other than that, I was just going to wrap it up. One thing that occurred to me is how in 2017, the first time you appeared on Millennial, and I think towards the end of that stream, we decided, why don't we do this every year? And you can tell people what's happened in your life. And it's weird to think that we couldn't possibly have foreseen this in 2017, that we would be living in this age.
Never.
And how it would affect you personally and interact with your life. No one predicted this. And it's been a very strange, very strange time.
Yeah. I hope that anyone who's heard my story and has seen those previous episodes can see my story as one that's an uplifting one. It's like a perfect case study of the red pill, you know, someone who was living in delusion and by, you know, being honest with themselves, brutally honest with themselves. And I'm just a regular mediocre person. There's nothing special about me that makes me different than anybody else. Was able to overcome those things, and that you can use as a source of inspiration in your own life to overcome whatever it is that you're dealing with.
Yes, I think so. As I've said with other people, it's great to have an example to look at and see, rather than someone just saying it would be a good idea to do X. It's great to see someone actually doing it, and then you can see that it really is possible.
Yes.
Because for a lot of people, just having a normal life what we used to call normal life now seems impossible.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, thank you for setting such a good example.
Doing my best.
All right. Well,
thank you for having me, and Merry Christmas. Well, thank you.
Thank you, and Merry Christmas to you. And I hope you'll appear again next year.
Me too.
And good luck in the meantime with this new world.
Thank you. You as well.
All right. Okay. I'll be back soon with the next stream. I'll try to sort out my modem as much as I can, but there's only so much I can do. All right. See you soon.
Millennial Woes has created many things, and this is your chance to own one of them. A unique piece of work handcrafted by the Vile Vlogger to commemorate Millennial 2021. 100 hours of highly skilled labor went into producing this animated vector graphic, which can be magnified to any size. In the iconic Millennial Woes font, it glistens and responds to your touch. And at the center of it all, a figure representative of 2021, the White Stag, symbolizing endurance, discovery, and rejuvenation. This one-of-a-kind creation is up for sale as an NFT. Follow the link below, and it can be yours forever. This is your only chance.